Hey everyone, and welcome to Seriously Risky Business, the podcast we do here at Risky Biz HQ, where we have a nice long conversation with Tom Uren about the newsletter that he writes for us of the same name, which you can find at news.risky.biz. Tom Uren joins me now. G'day Tom, how are you going?
G'day Patrick, good, I'm well.
Excellent. And this week's edition of the podcast is sponsored by Yubico, which is, there's some of those sponsors where you can just put your hand on your heart and say, endorse. Absolutely, Yubico is one of them because, of course, they make YubiKeys and it's a technology that they've been making for a long time. And, it's good kit, right? So if you need some, MFA hardware security tokens, that's where you should get them. Let's just say it plainly. I'd also like to thank Lawfare and the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation for their support of the work Tom does with us at Risky Biz. And yeah, let's get into it, mate. You've written about a few things this week. I'm going to start with your second item because it is something that we didn't actually cover on the sort of primary Risky Business podcast. And you've done a bit of you've taken a bit of a look at China's so-called Delete A project, where the A stands for America. It's real funny. Like we are known to sort of quip about the Chinese being free market communists, but now they're getting like they're really sort of leaning into marketing, right? With Delete A and catchy names and stuff. But why don't you tell us what their Delete America project is all about?
Right. So the Wall Street Journal reported that there was a government directive, and it's called Document 79. Just based on
that's
the number.
That's less catchy.
Yeah, and colloquially, it's known as Delete A for Delete America. And for obvious reasons, it was very sensitive, and officials weren't allowed to take a copy of the order. They were just shown it. But the whole point is get America out of the supply chain, essentially. So it talks about particularly state-owned companies in finance, energy, and other sectors to replace foreign software in their IT systems by 2027.
That's a pretty tight timeline.
So this order was issued in 2022, so a couple of years ago. It's still, I think, a pretty tight timeline.
Yeah. But obviously, I mean, honestly, I just heard you say that and thought, good luck.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's right. And I think there's a sort of element here where it doesn't seem that it's necessarily just about security. Like, they don't want to get rid of these companies because they think that they're necessarily vulnerabilities, but it is about self-sufficiency. Mm. And at the same time that they've promulgated this order, they're trying to stop America from decoupling from China. So they want to sell products to the US and the West, and at the same time deliberately cut US software out of their supply chain.
This is the way China rolls, right? Like, you see them having a good cry at the moment about the TikTok stuff, right? Where we've just seen an act pass Congress where TikTok will ByteDance will be forced to sell TikTok if this act gets through the Senate and gets signed by the president. I mean, let's see how that goes because the politics are a bit fraught on this one. And, you know, they're kicking up a big old stink about that, but it's not like American social media companies are, you know, able to actually operate in China.
Yeah, that's right. So there was always an argument based on that US companies aren't allowed, US social media companies aren't allowed to operate in China, that TikTok, you know, what's the story? Why are they allowed to operate freely in the States? And I think the knowledge of this document just highlights the hypocrisy and the I think it gives US people a real reason to say, you know, WTF, what's going on here? Why would we accept that?
Like, well, I would say to an American, if they were confused about this, I would just say the Chinese are not your friends. If I had to boil it down into its simplest form, that's probably what I would say. It's interesting though, because it's hard to say that a desire to get this stuff out of their supply chains is irrational, particularly when we're looking at a brewing conflict over the Taiwan Strait. You know, I would think it would be absolutely the prudent thing to do, which is to not rely on American vendors that could do things like, you know, in the case of Microsoft or whatever, you know, what if the US government in a time of war says that's it, no more security patches for the Chinese, or, you know, no more updates, or, you know, please insert this code or whatever. Like, you know, I could just see how there would be an unacceptable level of risk to Chinese interests of continuing to run stuff like Windows. It's nuts. Like, I think this is entirely sensible.
It makes sense, except for the premise of why you're doing it.
Yes.
So the premise, at least everyone thinks the premise, is we may want to engage in military action against Taiwan. And so if that's on the table, then this makes sense.
Yeah.
Invading Taiwan makes no sense. Like, it's an ideological project rather than a rational one, just because of the damage it would cause to Taiwan, to China, to the global economy.
Well, luckily they've got a leader over there who's not concerned with ideology, right, Tom?
Yeah, that's right. And so I think the real significance of this document is that
that was sarcasm for anyone who's confused, by the way. But anyway,
it points out that that is on the cards. An invasion of Taiwan is on the cards. Here's preparatory steps that make it at least give them that option. Now, so you were talking about whether it's rational or not. So it's rational in that case. The question for the US is it rational to do the same thing in response? And I guess the logic prior to the last couple of years has been we want to engage China in the global economy because that will prevent wars by having too much to lose.
Well, now the thinking is we don't want to engage them in the global economy because they're taking the money they make and using it to build up their wartime capacity, which is a recipe for disaster, right?
So, yeah. Well, it seems like that previous rationale just it hasn't worked. Like,
no.
I think that
used to be the consensus view, right? Which was the dangerous countries were the pariahs who had nothing to lose. You know, your sort of North Koreas and your Irans and whatnot. You know, these pariah states were the dangerous ones. And I think from what we've seen from Russia and the vibes emanating out of China at the moment, I think we've seen that. Oh no, okay, right. We are back to that. We are back to that stage in the cycle of history, aren't we? Where major nations start getting a bit unpredictable.
Yeah, that's right. And I think documents like this are tremendously powerful because they give people who are making basically the argument I'm making, I guess, something to point to and say, look, it's in black and white. They've promulgated it. It's official policy. And it prevents or makes it difficult for people to argue, well, you know, They're not really doing that.
Yeah. They're doing it. There's so much stuff happening, isn't there, that just looks like straight-up preparation.
Yeah, so the other piece I touch on in the article is the group called Vault, that Microsoft calls Vault Typhoon, that we've spoken about several times. And they have been, the very short summary is that they have been compromising US critical infrastructure, and the only reason that anyone can see is to prepare for the event of a future conflict. So when you've got the, you know, kind of higher level government policy, you've got shorter sort of, I guess I would call it tactical military type preparation, all the strands of evidence are pointed in the same direction. And so there's very little room for doubt that this is at least a possibility, and that makes me think that therefore we should do something about it.
Counterpoint, right? Which is that, you know, there's been words exchanged between China and India recently, for example. And if there were to be some sort of conflict there, it might be a little bit unpredictable as to which side of that the Americans would land on. You know, could it not be that this is just generally a prudent thing to do, even if they're not planning an invasion of Taiwan? Because my opinion on that is it would still be prudent, but it probably wouldn't happen. Does that make sense? Do you know what I mean? It'd be like, yeah, we should do that. And then it wouldn't go out. The advice wouldn't go out. It wouldn't become policy. It'd just be a bunch of people saying, yeah, we think we should do this. Does that make sense to you?
I know what you're saying. Like, yeah, there is, I think, an argument for self-sufficiency, full stop, for many countries, not just China.
Yeah.
I guess COVID sort of highlighted that many economies are dependent upon external supply chains, and there's been changes since that. So I think that is an argument. I think that what makes this worse is that even though Volt Typhoon is kind of in the massive scope of geopolitics, it's one small part of the puzzle. It's a piece that is pointing in the same direction to make you more concerned rather than less.
Yeah.
It's harder to say this is just about economic self-sufficiency or IT self-sufficiency. It's about preparing for separation rather than self-sufficiency.
I mean, you know, honestly, what we're doing here is tea leaf reading. It is. Yeah. But it's like educated tea leaf reading, which is enough to make me a little bit, you know, feel a bit down about the trajectory of things at the moment.
Well, like I'm an inveterate optimist, but that doesn't mean
you can't see the optimistic take.
Yeah, that's right. The optimistic take is we've got a chance to do something. We should do something and reduce the chances of the really bad outcomes happening. I mean, I guess that's kind of why I write about these things in a newsletter.
What a wonderful timeline we live in, as the kids are known to say. Now, look, you know, you mentioned Microsoft. Some of the drama that their customers are experiencing at the hands of the Chinese. And, you know, the Russians are giving Microsoft and its customers a pretty difficult time at the moment. We saw this SVR attack, very technically interesting attack. Like, I've had so many awesome conversations since that happened about precisely how they did. This is the one where they brute-forced an account, an old test account on an abandoned tenant, and were able to sort of, you know, manipulate app entries and things and do authorizations, move laterally and privilege escalate into Microsoft's corporate email. I mean, it was awesome stuff, right? Like, it really bothers me too when you see adversaries doing these things for, you know, ultimately awful reasons, because Russia is doing these, you know, some pretty awful stuff, and China is, has got some pretty awful plans. And I hate having to look at it and say you got to hand it to them, right? Because it was a terrific attack. Now, Microsoft thought it had evicted them, and I'm guessing that they did evict them from their, you know, corporate email tenant, revoking apps, you know, this and that, nuking a few accounts. So they probably tidied that up. But now there's this whole second wave of attacks that are that have stemmed from that first incident, because it looks like these attackers were able to get into a few source repos. And not just that, they got some source code which had secrets in it, presumably. And they've also been able to extract secrets out of, like, the email that they got their hands on, because people were doing things like sharing tokens in emails and whatnot, which means Microsoft is having a bad time. They put out the news about this on a Friday afternoon, which is very Microsoft of them. But yeah, this is, so basically what we're saying is the SVR breach is continuing.
Yeah, so I looked at this through the lens of, I guess I've got a series now of how I think this all stems back to a kind of Microsoft culture that didn't focus on security appropriately. So they've built up this cloud architecture, and those couple of breaches from both the Chinese and the Russian SVR, essentially my take is that you've got attackers doing things that were maybe theoretically impossible, like they just shouldn't have happened. Certainly in the Chinese case, there were things like keys that did things that they shouldn't, keys that didn't expire when they should have. And
keys that just didn't have to expire at all.
Yeah, that's right. Which is the case there, where
they weren't rotating them.
Had expiry dates that were meaningless.
Yeah.
And so now you're in a situation...
I think what you're getting at here is that maybe Microsoft's secrets management isn't quite what it should be.
Well, it's not even the secrets man. Well, that's possible. I guess it's what I'm thinking is that you would try and evict someone and say, I'll put up a wall here, and it turns out that you don't realize that the wall has a hole in it because of the way you've inadvertently introduced vulnerabilities over time.
Yeah.
And so I think this could be quite difficult.
You reckon it's going to be difficult to get them properly evicted?
Like.
like properly shut this whole thing down. I mean, I guess
yes,
because they have been evicted.
Yes,
but yeah, it's the long tail, right? And I think it's interesting. It's an interesting case study in attackers using what they have to get done what they need to get done, which is, oh, okay, we've been evicted from here, but okay, let's go through all of this info we've got, pull out some secrets, see what that gets us, and on and on and on. And Microsoft just says that has said that its customers are being targeted by this.
Yeah, yeah. The other interesting thing, which I didn't write about, is that this is the flip side of the US Cyber Command's persistent engagement strategy. That when adversaries deploy it against you, it's that they keep on coming back and coming back and coming back.
But I mean,
back.
Usually they're talking about persistent engagement in terms of targeting foreign operators, not foreign targets. You know what I mean? That's more what they mean by persistent engagement.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting that both sides are, now what I take out of it is that both sides are like in a mood to just, let's not just give up. Let's just keep going and going and going.
It's the P and APT, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's the thing. They are operationally sophisticated and they're going to keep going and going and going and going and going. All righty. Well, look, let's wrap it up there, Tom. You have also got a bit of a write-up of the Alfie stuff. But I spoke about that yesterday on the main show, which is, you know, your opinion and your conclusion is that, you know, people have been saying the Alfie disruption wasn't effective, but your take is, well, they probably wouldn't have exit scammed after a big payday if they weren't feeling the heat. And I think there's certainly something to that. You're actually not with us next week. You're taking a week off.
Yeah,
so I'm going to be writing Seriously Risky Business next week. So
you'll have to interview yourself, Patrick.
That's right. I think Adam's going to help me out with that one. Got a few ideas about what I'm going to be writing about. It's been a while since I put characters down into a document for publication, but there you go. So, Tom, have yourself a wonderful week off. We'll miss you very much, and we'll catch you when you're back.
Thanks, Patrick.